The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast, and this is episode 75, and I have my fearless sidekick with me, my wife, Faith. How are you doing, dear?
I'm doing great.
Well, it's good to have you this fine day. You're looking beautiful.
Thank you.
If I can spit it out.
I just got done cleaning brush, so burning brush.
Burning brush. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, y'all, once again, we have an incredible guest that I want to get to introduce to y'all. This is Dr. Nelson Vasquez. My mouse will work. Dr. Vasquez, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing all right. A little bit, not too much stress. I don't get too stressed, but you know, we have a hurricane coming and I live in Central Florida.
And that's devotion. Like I emailed Dr. Vasquez and I said, hey, are you still good for this podcast? Cause there's like this major hurricane. And if you listen to the news, in 3 days, Florida won't exist. So I didn't know if you wanted to still like do the podcast thing or did you evacuate to Mars or what?
I've been told to do so by some family members and even crossed my mind a little bit. Once before, 20 years ago, 2004, there was with this huge hurricane coming. I think it was Francis. And I had all my kids are grown up, but I had small kids at the time. And I just put them in a minivan. I went to Virginia and left the state. That year, we were hit by 5 hurricanes in Florida, 2004. Mm-hmm. I believe it's the most since then, even though we always get them. I'm staying and hopefully things will be okay.
Great. Yeah. So we're praying for everybody in Florida and it does look better now. I know it's changing trajectory and it's calming a little bit. So hopefully that remains the case if it doesn't get any assistance. And so Dr. Vasquez, the reason I wanted to have you on is I was talking to Carrie Mann and asking him about guests and he kind of was like filling me in on your story. And for those of our listeners that don't know, maybe Dr. Nelson, maybe you could give us a little bit of your history as far as your practice in medicine. And we're going to get into the carnivore diet. So maybe you could like set us up for that.
All right. So, yeah, long story. And I don't know where you want me to start, but I was about 3 years old when I decided to become a doctor. I don't even know when exactly I decided. I've always knew I was going to be a doctor. I remember the age of 3 because a few events that happened, and I remember those. But I had an older brother who suffered from epileptic seizures, and I used to tell him I was going to be a doctor to cure him. He passed when he was 8. And I was not quite 6, but I kept my promise.
Wow.
That's great.
And this year will be 40 years in December since I graduated from medical school.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow. Well, we have a 9 and a 6-year-old little brothers. So, yeah, that's pretty tragic. I can't imagine. One losing the other at this point. Yeah. So, yeah.
At the time, I'm the second of 3. He was the older brother. And then just a few days before he passed, my sister had turned just 2. So yeah. She, I've asked her about this. She doesn't remember much, which is, in a way, good. She's seen pictures, of course, of the family and all that. But it was somewhat traumatic, I would say. Was 5, almost 6. That was my introduction to death. I didn't know what that was before the age of 5.
So you got into medicine, and then so what type of medicine were you practicing?
So I graduated medical school. I did my residency in family medicine. Family physicians do a residency training of 3 years, just like internists and pediatricians do. And you're probably familiar, I can tell you, from the most well-known doctors to you because of what we're going to get into later. But Dr. Berry is a family physician. Dr. Tony Hampton is a family physician. I'm a family physician. Dr. Westman is an internist. Dr. Boss is an internist. Dr. Kilt is an OBGYN, right? So all those specialties usually is 3 or 4 years. Now, many of those also have some subspecialty training as well. But most residency trainings are 3 or 4 years, except the surgical ones where just to be a general surgeon is 5 years, and then tack on a few more years of training for niche specialties, you know.
So, okay, so maybe we'll fast forward a little bit and you could kind of tell us, what was your motivating factor for changing your diet and seeking a health solution through your diet rather than through modern medicine?
So I have always struggled with weight and did multiple diets since I was a teenager. My mother used to go to Weight Watchers, and almost every popular diet there was, even before I went to medical school, I did some version of it. But in 1992, I read Dr. Atkins' book, like many people were introduced to a low-carb or ketogenic type of diet by Dr. Atkins. And since then, I was already a physician by that time. I have always adopted that advice to my patients, the low-carb approach, and have used it to go down usually no more than 40 pounds. It seemed that I had a set point where I hit 40 and it would stay there for a while. And of course, went off the diet multiple times. I did several things and I ended up losing, you know, 30, 40 pounds. And usually since 92, it would be some sort of low carb diet. But I had hit about 320, and I'm barely, I don't make it to 5'7". I'm like 6'5" and a half. So being 320 pounds was a lot. And I have fluctuated around that weight, losing some weight, usually no more than 250 to 60 for most occasions. So at the end of 2022, I was between 305 and 310. And I was tired of being tired and sick and multiple health problems. I had already had a stroke in 2018. I developed diabetes back in, I think it was 95 or something like that. And the multiple problems, if you have diabetes, you end up having almost everything else that comes along with metabolic problems. And so I went back to what I knew, you know, the Dr. Vasquez's modified Atkins diet. I knew what to do. So I started cutting on the carbs, started losing some weight. And in June, on June 12th, 2023, I was diagnosed with having macular edema, which is a problem in the retina. And that was a turning point, among others, because my daughter-in-law was pregnant with my first grandson. And my only grandchild at the moment, he just turned one a couple of weeks ago. So I said, no, I want to see my grandchild and my family. So started doing some additional research. I come across Kerry Mann's Hampstead channel when he was interviewing Shaun White. And even though I was aware that some people did eat meat only, at the time, I wasn't even aware. I didn't know about all the doctors, some of which I mentioned already. So I started doing some more research. And at the end of June last year, I just went full on carnivore. I have lost from my heaviest 115 to 120 pounds.
Wow.
Definitely in that 14-month period, and it's been now 21 or 22 months, but 14 months between going just low carb and continuing to go down, I ended up losing certainly over 100 pounds. Wow. So far, maintained it.
So with all your medical training, were you taught anything on nutrition or the impact of nutrition and health parallel? Or anything like that?
So I don't even remember if there was a class of nutrition in my medical school or not. Well, okay. I know for sure I didn't have a class, like a semester class. I don't remember having much nutrition training besides learning that proteins and carbohydrates have 4 calories and that fat has 9 calories. We learn all the anatomy and physiology and biochemistry and, you know, all the processes that go through in our body. But unfortunately, a lot of the medical training in medical school and even after medical school is about how to treat a problem and is very centered about, well, you have this condition, I have a medicine for that. And do you have this? You have this condition, I have a drug for that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the postgraduate training is done sponsored by pharmaceutical companies. So you're told very early on how to treat diseases with this medication. And sometimes the lifestyle changes are not addressed. Now, if you go through the guidelines of most medical conditions, lifestyle changes is always listed. But for example, high blood pressure, the number one recommendation is to do lifestyle changes for at least 6 months before you put someone on medication, unless the blood pressure is high enough that you are fearing a stroke soon, right? So, but at some point you end up just putting patients on medications. And even though I have always had the lifestyle change as part of my treatments, sometimes the patients come just expecting, okay, well, I have high blood pressure or have diabetes or have this or that, you know, to give me the medicine for it. I've literally had patients when I try to talk to them about, especially in the past couple of years, when I try to talk to them about, well, why don't we do this with diet, because, you know, I can list you now 30 medical problems at least, where the first thing I think of now is a low-carb diet will help with that. But some people accept it, some people don't accept it. Some people literally just tell me, no, just give me a prescription. I'm okay.
Hmm. With your stroke that you suffered, do you think, was that tied to any of the medications you were taking?
No, I think it was tied to what I wasn't doing correctly. That year, I had never had problems with my blood pressure. That year, I developed earlier in the year problems with blood pressure, and I was taking blood pressure medication. I reviewed recently all my labs for previous 15, 16 years, and I always had my triglycerides on the high side. They were somewhere between 150 and 300. It had gone past 300 once at least. My good, I don't like the good and bad terms on the cholesterol because I don't think there any of them is bad, but you know what people know as the good cholesterol, the HDL, has always been on the low side, especially when the triglycerides were high. And so it was a combination of things. I was near 300 pounds. My blood pressure was a little high. I had developed a bad habit of drinking energy drinks frequently.
Oh, yeah.
And my cholesterol had always been a little bit high. I never took cholesterol medications before that, certainly. My triglycerides were high. My good cholesterol, HDL, was low. So, and yeah, my LDL was also high. But the rest of the story was not good. I had diabetes. Number one risk for, the list is long. Just insert here whether you want to, number one risk for cardiovascular disease, of course, one of the most or the most common cause of death, along with, for example, cancer. They're both extremely high on diabetic patients. So it's the number one risk for almost anything, any chronic disease, and even infections, is having diabetes. So I had diabetes. The control wasn't bad, considering, you know, according to standards. My A1C had been 6.7 for several years. And even after I started a low-carbohydrate diet and I had lost 40-plus pounds, it was still 6.7, interestingly enough. Hmm. It only came down after I went carnivore.
Wow, that's interesting. So you were kind of keto and taking the weight off, but your score didn't drop till after you went carnivore. So, yes, since, yeah. So since going carnivore, I know you emailed me, you kind of had like a laundry list of ailments and whatnot. So maybe you could kind of go through your different maladies that have been either subsided, eliminated. Maybe you could kind of go through that. And then also maybe on the, when speaking about diabetes, maybe talk about how it's affected your blood sugar and your insulin usage and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I mentioned diabetes, of course. My A1C is 5.4, has been high. It was 5.3 or 5.4 at the end of last year. And it was 5.4 when I checked it less than a month ago. So it stayed there. I do use still some insulin sometimes. My pancreas kind of exhausted from producing insulin for 29 years. And so I still use a small amount of insulin.
But you don't have to use insulin every day or every meal?
Well, I've been doing a lot of N1 experiments with that. From January to May, I didn't use any insulin at all. I mean, for five straight months, I didn't. And my fasting blood sugars were a little bit high. I wasn't comfortable with, but they were not extremely high either. 110 to 120, 125. I wouldn't even diagnose someone with diabetes with those, right? Because if you go by the fasting blood sugar, it's 126 or higher. If you go by the A1C, I didn't qualify either. But it wasn't under 100. So I went back to try. And so when I need some insulin to be able to have my fasting under 100. And I did test my C-peptide, which is the prohormone before it turns into insulin. And that tells you what your pancreas is actually producing. And it was low. So I'm not producing enough insulin. So I do have to use a little bit of the insulin. So sometimes I'll use 10 to 20 units a day. Our bodies produce anywhere from 20 to 50 units. A normal person will produce, and we're not talking of someone who's metabolically sick, someone who is within normal will produce 50, up to a 50 units a day from its own pancreas. So I'm not even using that. I do produce some, so I'm adding to it just to keep my fasting blood sugars under 100. But we didn't mention how much I was using. I was using up to 300 units a day. And it was for my regular diet, which would include rice and beans. I'm from Puerto Rico. I grew up eating rice and beans 2 times a day. We also eat a lot of the roots and fruits. It's it's the tropics, it's the Caribbean. So to be able to do that with the occasional ultra processed apple fritters or donuts, or whenever a pharmaceutical company would come to talk to us about diabetes, maybe with a box of donuts, mm-hmm. which it was, never sat well with me, but I still ate them. So to be able to have that diet, I needed to use up to 300 units a day of insulin.
Wow.
So...
Yeah, and then due to that imbalance, what other ailments did you suffer from?
All right, so almost every diabetic patient that's not, especially when they're not well controlled, will eventually develop high blood pressure, will eventually develop some cardiovascular additional complication. Now, we know that the blood sugar basically is one of the first steps in producing inflammation. So when there is too much blood sugar around, you can develop retinopathy. By the way, my retinopathy was not because of the diabetes. You could blame it. A purist will say, oh, you had diabetes. You were going to develop that anyways. I never had any problems with my eyes until I started using a GLP-1 for diabetes control. Okay. And if you read all the possible side effects of the GLP-1s, the most well-known is the stomach paralysis, right? And some nausea. But the retinopathy is one of them.
Wow.
So problems with your retina is a common.
Which one were you using? Were you using Ozempic or?
I wasn't Ozempic, and I don't like to single it out because it's not exclusive to one. I'll tell you what I was using. It was Trulicity, but Ozempic, Trulicity, Mounjaro, I mean, all of them can cause. I don't think there is a side effect from them that's exclusive to any one of them. And some people may develop nausea. Well, nausea is a side effect with all of them. The stomach paralysis, which I also got from the medication, it's not exclusive. All of them can cause it. We can talk about how good each one might be regarding weight loss, but as far as the side effects, they're all the same. If you read the package insert, they're all the same. And whether it's called, now there's a couple of names for the semaglutide, there's a couple of names for the Mounjaro generic. Is it Mounjaro? Anyways, so the first one, a lot of people don't even know it. The first one came out 15 years ago. It was called Byetta, and you had to use it twice a day, every day. Nowadays, you only use an injection once a day, but you want to have all the side not the side effects. You don't want to have the side effects, but do you want to have all the benefits of Ozempic? Go on a very low carbohydrate diet, and everything that they do, you can do with a very low carbohydrate or carnivore diet. Everything. And we can talk about that for a while, but you will not have the side effects that they can give you. And the major side effects with them, which include the gastric paralysis or what's called gastroparesis or gastroparesis, depending where you're from, even the retina problems, the nausea, some people may get constipation, some people may get diarrhea. A lot of the gastrointestinal, you will not have severe and very little side effects from following a very low carbohydrate diet or carnivore diet. And it does all the same things. It can suppress your appetite. All the same things. I mean,
What made you switch from like a keto diet to a carnivore? What was your thought process in that?
So when I was diagnosed with the macular edema, I did two things. I stopped taking the medication that was causing the problem because it had not helped me lose weight. My weight, I used the medicine for 2 years. My weight had been, maybe I lost 10 pounds at the beginning, but it just went back up. And I did not start losing weight until I changed what I was doing and putting in my mouth. That was the real change that caused weight loss. And my A1C before I started on that medicine was 6.7. And after, I think a few weeks before I stopped the medicine, it was 6.7.
Wow.
So it had not helped for what I wanted it, which was mainly the diabetes control. It had not helped for the weight loss. I was still over 300 pounds. And so when they told me about the eye and my daughter-in-law was pregnant, that was one of the main motivations to say, okay, I got to be more strict, decrease my carbs even more. And I started researching. And 2 weeks later, I went carnivore. And immediately, like on the third, fourth day, I wasn't hungry at all. I fasted probably 3 days or 4 days after starting that way of eating. I wasn't hungry, so I skipped my meal that day. I was eating only once a day because of the gastric paralysis. I can't eat. I sometimes try to eat twice a day if I get hungry early in the day, but usually I have to wait 8-10 hours, and I also use some gastric enzymes as well to be able to help along. So usually I still eat once a day. Today I haven't had anything to eat. I just cooked for my wife and got two of my adult kids still at home. So maybe there is still some steak left.
So do you, one thing that I noticed, I had a lot of immediate success on carnivore, and then my energy and sleep, my energy dropped and my sleep got disrupted. And what I found is that I was under eating because I was so satiated. I was never hungry. I was eating once a day, but I wasn't eating enough. So then I had to bump up my protein and my fat, and my sleep improved and my energy improved. Do you use any kind of, we use something called Carb Manager. It's a free app. Do you track any of that, or do you mess around with your macros as far as what you're intaking?
I am not a tracker. I don't track much. I know how to track. But I don't become obsessed. I do have one of those apps. It might be Carb Manager on my phone. It's Chronometer, I think. But I basically have calculated more or less how much protein I want to eat during the day, and I try, and it is a real problem under eating sometimes. You can't overeat protein and fat. Right. It gets to the point where, okay, I'm full and I don't want this anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes in one meal might not be enough food for you to have. So you have to be conscious of that. And especially if you're doing it for health reasons and not necessarily trying to lose weight, you need to try to eat enough, and you might need to eat twice a day or three times a day. It's not, time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting might not be for everyone. If you do it, that's great. So I have to pay attention, yes. And especially if I only have steak, I might be able to get satisfied and feel good for a few days, right? But when I start adding other things that are maybe still carnivore, but I'm having maybe more frequently a little bit of fish or eggs or cheese, or when I'm not eating enough, my primary food source is beef, although yeah. I have some lamb chop steaks in the refrigerator right now. I like lamb, I like goat, but basically ruminant animals, I feel best with that.
Yeah.
It's not that I have a problem with eggs or fish. I eat them. I do occasionally have some liver. I know it's not the greatest taste. A lot of people don't like it. I eat it. I've always sort of liked it, okay. But I have some liver once in a while. I call it my multivitamin. And so I either slice it or cut it in cubes and have it ready to add to other foods whenever I remember, okay, I gotta have some liver today.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I was just wanted to know. So when you were eating a more keto diet, what did that look like? And then what does your normal carnivore diet look like today?
So usually I would cook either broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, non-starchy vegetables.
Okay.
I'm not too picky. Growing up, I didn't, my salad was lettuce and tomato and maybe some cucumbers. And I could eat those. Never had any problems with food sensitivities. But I sort of learned how to eat a lot of the other vegetables throughout the years, okra or green beans, the cauliflower, the broccoli, the Brussels sprout, and some meat.
Keto, a very clean keto. Because I know some people will watch this and say, oh, well, maybe he was eating like a dirty keto diet, a lot of highly processed keto foods. So then when he switched to carnivore, obviously, yeah, he's going to see improvement. Yeah.
And for many years, I've avoided sugar. Like I said, since the early 90s, my first advice to diabetic patient is stop the bread, stop the grains, stop the legumes, stop the potatoes, all the roots, and go from there. So I knew what to eliminate. And so when I wanted to be good, I would follow that advice. And sometimes I wasn't following my own advice. That led me to a stroke and a bunch of other problems. By the way, the hypertension is gone. I don't take blood pressure medication. I was on two high doses of blood pressure medication, 7.5 months into being carnivore. Last February was my last time I needed to take blood pressure medication. Reflux, gastroesophageal reflux disease, or acid stomach. I took for a long time medication. I don't take any anymore. Chronic pain is a big one because I had back surgery. It's going to be 37 years ago this coming November. So less than a month now, it'll be 37 years since I had back surgery. And I've never had a complication from the surgery, by the way. So it was basically life-saving. I have to have it. I had spent 39 days in the hospital to get even, including the post-surgery recovery, but always had back pain, had some nerve damage from the herniated disc, the severely herniated disc. Had a stroke in 2018, so I had multiple reasons to have numbness and tingling in my legs. I also developed a B12 deficiency from what? From two medications I was using. Metformin interferes with the absorption of B12, and omeprazole, pantoprazole, all these PPIs group, it's called their potent acid inhibitor, but they also block B12 absorption. Yeah. So I was B12 deficient. Of course, what's the best supplement for B12? Is red meat.
Yeah.
So I don't take blood pressure medication. I had, for 30 years, plantar fasciitis. I always wear an insert on my shoes, which I always was changing from one pair of shoes to the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's on one of my shoes right now, but I don't pay attention to that anymore. I have my sneakers right now and they don't have the insert. I don't need it anymore. If you've had plantar fasciitis, it's very painful. And if you haven't had it, you don't want it. I had a nail fungus for several years, just one of my toes, toenails. And I always kept it short. I had consulted with a colleague, podiatrist. Yeah, you have some fungus there, but all the other nails were okay. So we never used medication. When you use medication for the nails, you have to do 3 to 6 months, and sometimes, depending on the medication, a whole year before you see any results. That's gone. Completely better.
Wow.
What else? I'm looking at my list here. I had a little bit of eczema. That's also gone. I had multiple reasons, like I said, for the neuropathy. I still have a little bit of numbness and tingling, but it's nowhere near where it was before. It had, definitely has there, there has been improvement. The stroke had left me with some weakness on the right side, and I had recovered enough that I didn't need to walk all the time with a cane, but very frequently I used the cane. Whenever I, especially when I was over 300 pounds, if I went to the store, I had to use one of those electric carts to move around, because I basically couldn't be standing or walking around the store for too long. And if I was feeling good enough, I could be pushing the shopping cart. But sometimes if it wasn't available, sometimes I would just go back home and not even get in the store. I can walk the whole store now feeling okay. So don't take any anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxants. My level of energy seems to go down only when I forget to use enough salt. So electrolytes for me are needed, but not everybody needs to use electrolytes, by the way. So sometimes you need it, sometimes you don't. The famous keto flu or carnivore flu, if you ever had it, probably is a lot better, will get reversed with having enough electrolytes. But I've never had the keto flu. I did have a keto rash, which is supposed to last only a few weeks. I had it for almost 4 months, 3 or 4 months. I had it on my belly. But that went away as well. And I had mentioned the stroke, the weakness on the right side. I can no longer, I am right-handed, and the stroke left me with some weakness on the right side. And right now, I don't feel it. I cannot tell whether I'm weaker or not on one side. If I try to run, I'll limp. So there's still some, but it's a lot better than what it was. Even a couple of years ago, I had a couple of falls. I was having more back problems. I even had to have physical therapy, which, by the way, I had a wonderful therapist take me through that. Of course, I'm biased because he's one of my sons. And I did have some improvement with the therapy, but it was losing the weight that helped me. And losing the inflammation is not only the weight, it's the inflammation that you have with it. Because my arthritis on my back and my degenerative changes are still there. Mm-hmm. I have very bad degenerative changes on my neck, on my low back, but I have no pain. So, wow.
I wanted to talk about, you know, we know you're diabetic. And you said that you only eat one meal a day. And you also stated that you don't use insulin daily. So maybe we could dive into that just a little bit, because, you know, the talking points for diabetics and, you know, you have to eat multiple smaller meals. And here you're literally breaking all of the rules and you're not even using your insulin daily. So maybe you could break that down for us. How can you do that? Because you're not supposed to be able to do that.
So most patients with diabetes, and I still work in a primary care practice that where I'm not concentrated on metabolic health. I'm setting things up, by the way, to start doing some metabolic health assessments through telemedicine. That's in the works, but most of the patients in this practice are whatever you find in a typical practice, right? And most patients with diabetes have high levels of insulin, not low, okay? So one of the things that you need to do on diabetic patients is measure insulin. Because how are you going to be, how do you know it's high unless you measure it, right? Now, you can take your hands-off approach from a patient standpoint when you decide to do a diet like this. And you can say, oh, I'm not going to measure anything and I'm just going to go for it. That, you know, might be okay with a lot of people. If you're having a lot of, taking a lot of medicine, especially diabetes, where you can run into problems, if you use insulin, that there's a couple of other type of medications, not all, but a couple of other type of medications that you need to adjust and adjust very quickly. You should do it with a provider who's familiar with deep prescribing and with navigating the low carb diets, because you can have real bad hypoglycemic episodes with insulin. So I usually don't use much more insulin that I need. Like I said, I sometimes don't use or skip a day, or sometimes I might use 10 units, 15, but most, sometimes 20. And I rarely use the immediate acting or the short acting insulin, which is the most common one to cause low blood sugar episodes. So if you're diabetic on insulin, for example, yes, you have to be careful, especially if you decide to go into a low-carb or carnivore type of diet. Probably you should be working with someone who can help you, guide you along. And there are some medications that you may need to stop immediately and some other medications that can stay there until you're well below the normal numbers, okay? A lot of people have a lot, I would say, misunderstandings, for example, with the metformin. Metformin does all the right things. The major side effect with metformin is diarrhea and abdominal cramps, and about 45%. When you switch to an extended release metformin, that number goes down to 8%. It is not a very strong medication. So it's not going to, number one, it's not going to cause hypoglycemic episodes by itself. So it should probably be the last one to be discontinued. Whereas you've seen the commercial, dancing people, Jardiance, right? Jardiance is the first medication that you need to, Jardiance for Siga, Invokana. There's another one I'm missing the name right now, but that type of, that group of medications need to be stopped immediately if you want to go low carb, because they may cause problems. Most of the other medications don't cause by themselves hypoglycemia, except for the older hypoglycemic medications like glipizide, diabetia, glaburide, Amaryl, which is glimepiride. And there is even older medication than that that I haven't prescribed in 35 years. But some of those need to be stopped as well very quickly. So yes, you have to be careful. Now, if you're not taking any of the medications, you get diagnosed with diabetes, this is the first thing you should try. It shouldn't be even any of the medications, maybe the metformin, if you can tolerate it. But the first thing to do is cut your carbohydrates. Cut them down to at least 30 or 20 or down to zero. You can start it slow. You can start it quickly. There's people on both camps. Just jump right in, or just take it slow and gradually decrease. You know, any way you want to do it, as long as you do it, I'm okay with it. And there are good reasons, and there are pros and cons with doing it either way. Especially the people who develop like a keto flu very easily.
Right.
But well, so, go ahead.
So are you going to be working with people, you think, in the future to help them, people that are on some of these medications, working with them to help them? I know Dr. Sean Baker has an app and a mm-hmm. group of a network of physicians in his group, Rivera Health. So you're trying to set something like that up as well, you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's great. Not as big and as huge as Dr. Baker, because he's basically set up a huge multi-state company, but I'll be able to see patients for metabolic health evaluations. And I already do with my own patients. If they mm-hmm. want to go this way, I give them a little bit of information, some materials. I do extensive testing sometimes if the patient wants. And so we want to see where they are. Even when cholesterol numbers are out of whack,
right,
the best thing to do is to go on a diet like this, because the most influence on the cholesterol numbers is your sugar. It's mm-hmm. not your dietary fat, which we now know, and there's multiple studies where the dietary cholesterol and saturated fats are not a risk by themselves. Now, if you're eating a lot of, pardon the word, crap with it, all the ultra processed foods, and then you're using a lot of vegetable seed oils, which is another one of my pet peeves, you shouldn't be eating seed oils. You shouldn't be eating anything that comes in a box, a bag, or a can. I tell patients, whole foods, eliminate the starchy ones, definitely. And basically nothing that comes in a box, a bag, or a can.
Have you experimented all with fasting and any type of cycles? I know you basically kind of eat intermittent fasting, like one meal a day, but have you experimented with any type of extended fasting?
Yeah, I've done up to, I think, 5 days has been my maximum. Several times I've done skip a day, basically, since I eat only once a day. So that's automatically a 48-hour fast. Yeah. Sometimes I've done 72 and up to 5 days. There was a period where I was doing every week, almost 96 hours straight without eating, and then 3 or 4 days I would eat. So I don't have any problems with it. I feel good. I don't have, usually during those days, I might not take any insulin. But we're supposed to, insulin is not the devil. It's just a hormone mm-hmm. that you need in your body, right? By the way, the main function of insulin is not lowering blood sugar, it's making fat. It's a fat storage hormone. So too much insulin is bad. Insulin, high levels of insulin by itself cause inflammation as well. It's not only the blood sugar that causes inflammation, but the insulin by itself being too high. But I can go a few days sometimes without eating, and I don't need to use any insulin during those days, definitely.
Wow. That's very interesting. Because, yeah, a lot of people, you get that with diabetics too. You know, they say, well, obviously I can't fast at all. So I was curious to see your experience with that.
Well, the reason you've been taught typically that not to fast because your blood sugar might go down too much. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason the blood sugar is going down is if you're using specific type of medications. So if you're using insulin, then that's one medication that you don't want to use if you're going to be doing fasting. If you're using insulin, you shouldn't be trying to do fasting on your own. There are a couple of things that I would, with a patient, I would probably say, let's wait maybe 6 months on this way of eating before, you know, we try to do any type of fasting. But I disappeared for a moment, right?
You're back. It dropped the feed.
Yeah, I had an alarm. Sorry about that. Anyways, so you don't want to be doing fasting if you're taking insulin. You can get off the insulin fairly quickly. If you're serious about going into, you don't have to even go carnivore. 20 grams of carbohydrate a day, you're going to be off insulin very quickly, unless you're taking huge amounts or your blood sugars are extremely high. And you can be off of all the, there are three groups of medication that will probably want to have a patient off of them before they try to do any fasting. But yes, intermittent fasting, if you've listened to Dr. Jason Fung and you've read some of the books, that's one of the things he recommends, certainly for diabetes reversal. And we've proven we can reverse diabetes. At least we can get those numbers to completely normal.
Type one? Okay.
Even type one, you can be 5.2. Now the average type one diabetic, the average A1C normally is, I think, like 7.5 to 8.5. It's usually very difficult to control. And part of that is because the powers that be would recommend, well, you eat all you want and then you chase your sugars with insulin.
Insulin, yeah.
And there are many type 1 diabetics that follow a carnivore diet. Now, they still need to use some insulin. And they'll always need to use insulin. By the way, I tested my own antibodies just to make sure I wasn't a type 1 or late autoimmune diabetes of adults, LADA. And all that is normal. I'm just, my pancreas is exhausted. But type 1 diabetics, which is basically an autoimmune type of diabetes, you can be carnivore. You have to be careful with the amounts of insulin that you use. You always need some insulin, but even type 1 diabetics can be under 5.4 or 5.2. I've seen type 1 diabetics anecdotally 4.8, 4.9. They're still using insulin, but your numbers can be that good.
Yeah, this is so good. I think this is so good because I think that, you know, diabetes is something that it touches all of us as Americans. I mean, I think they're saying 1 in 4 now. There's a billboard right in our town. I think it says 1 in 4 children. Is that what it is? It says
1 in 3, I think, at least.
It has the statistic. I think it's children are pre-diabetic. So this is, it's just an epidemic that's just happening more and more and more. You know, when we go to church every week, you know, almost everybody who sits at the table with us to eat lunch either is suffering from some type of sugar issue or is already diabetic, you know. So it's just an epidemic. And I think that sometimes people can get information, you know, you might get zealous on something, find a little bit of information online. And like you're saying, if you if you're on medications already, if you know that you are diabetic, you really do have to seek out a physician that can help you through this process. And you might still need a small amount of insulin to keep your body functioning at a good, healthy level, but you can still have success with this diet. It's just, you have to be smart about it.
You definitely, even if you're type 1, you're never going to be off insulin, but you can decrease. Right. And most people with type 2, and I hope to be one of those one day, because after 28, 29 years, I'm not expecting, there has been a lot of damage, right?
Yeah. So
I'm not expecting from overnight to become a 5.4 without any medications. Mm-hmm. So, but almost every diabetic can be off of all the medications. And mm-hmm. whether you want to call that a reversal, a remission, a cure, I don't care. You mm-hmm. get your A1C under control. And to me, control is not being still diabetic. Numbers, to me, control will be normal. Under 5.6 or less is what a normal hemoglobin A1C should be. And it's sad, you mentioned the children. Those statistics are children with type 2 diabetes.
Right, okay? Right.
80% of people with diabetes in the world have fatty liver. And it's a pandemic. It's pandemic proportions. If you go by the numbers, and I think everybody that has been alive in the past 4 years know what that means, right? Mm-hmm. It is a pandemic. Diabetes, anything related to metabolic health, whether it's pre-diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and particularly fatty liver, is basically at pandemic levels. And the problem is in the liver that you don't realize it until someone does a blood test. And you can have either a normal liver or you can have a fatty liver that is not causing inflammation. So your blood tests are going to be normal. So those are usually discovered when other tests for the abdomen are done, like an ultrasound or a CT scan, right? And they see fatty liver. But if it's not causing inflammation, you don't see it in the blood test. Once the liver enzymes are elevated, that's already not only fatty liver, but it's fatty liver with inflammation. It's called steatohepatitis. Steato is Latin root for fat. So steatohepatitis is not just fatty liver infiltration of the liver, which can cause inflammation, or it could be without inflammation. And after there's inflammation, then you can develop cirrhosis. And you can end up having to have, the last few patients I've had that had liver transplants, it was because of fatty liver, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because it's the same damage that alcohol causes.
Yes.
And it's not because of fat in your diet, it's because of carbohydrates, particularly fructose in your diet.
Right. Yes, I've heard Dr. Ken Berry talk about that with children, adults as well, but even children having fatty liver disease now. And it's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in children. So it's just diet related. And I think a lot of it is just lack of knowledge. You know, like you said, you were eating a pretty whole foods diet, you know, with some exceptions here or there. But even when you were trying to do keto or you had the information of Atkins, but when you still have that, I know for myself, that carb addiction where it's like, you know, I could eat a whole bowl of beans. I mean, I could eat sweet potatoes until they come out my ears, you know? So you just, you still have that need to eat all of those carbohydrates. And I think people that hear about carnivore or even a strict keto diet, they'll say, oh, I couldn't do that. Yeah, just give me the medicine, you know, because I know I'm already defeated. I'm going to say no. I'm going to eat the apple fritter. Even if I say I'm not going to eat the apple fritter, I'm going to eat the apple fritter because I'll have no control over that area of my life. And so people are already defeated. And I think if they try this, even just 20 grams of carbohydrates or less, like you're saying, just even a ketogenic diet that's, low carb, they're going to find that they actually have control over their food, that they're actually satiated, that they can kick that carb addiction. And it's a whole new world.
Yep. And everybody's not the same, of course,
sure. But
most people can, even if, I don't know the statistics, if you're having 100 to 130 grams, if how many have been able to go off diabetic medications, but certainly if you go below 50, I can almost guarantee you that if you do that long enough, mm-hmm. you're not going to have diabetes anymore. The thing is, you're not going to have those metabolic markers. When we talk about metabolic health, we're talking about, number one, abdominal obesity. We're talking, and by the way, I think I used up to a 54 or 56 in pants, I'm down to 38.
Wow.
And
it's amazing.
Yes. So abdominal obesity is one. I'm still mm-hmm. working on that. I'm a lot better. High triglycerides, low HDL, and blood pressure and blood sugar problems without medication. If they're normal without medication, then you don't have that problem with the blood sugar or with the blood pressure. But even if you're normal, but you're taking medication for the blood sugar, you're taking medication for the blood pressure, well, those are two things. And then if you only have one of the other three that we mentioned, that's called metabolic syndrome. So you're not metabolically healthy if you have even one of those. You want to be metabolically healthy again, you need to get your blood sugars under control, your blood pressures under control without medications, your triglycerides. Your triglycerides go down so quickly usually when you start. I can tell on follow-up tests, I can tell when someone has dropped their carbohydrate intake. It doesn't have to be extremely low. The triglycerides are a very good marker for that. And then the good cholesterol, I had never had a good cholesterol, HDL cholesterol over 40, never. My last one was 49. I still want to break that 50 number, but, you know, it'll come.
Mm-hmm.
So out of those five markers, which I had all five wrong, I still dealing with the abdominal fat, the visceral fat, and the blood sugar. No more blood pressure. My triglycerides are normal. My HDL is 49. But still working on it.
That's amazing.
I'm not going back. I mean, I have had occasionally the world is not going to come to an end if I have
right.
a pickle or some yeah. olives. Or, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had some avocado or right. something like that.
Right.
But mostly carnivore meals. Mm-hmm. Usually chicken or fish. I try to more often than not have some sort of ruminant animal. And it's not for everyone. Some people,
sure,
they don't like it because we've been indoctrinated against it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've been vegetarian in the past. Okay. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I've been a little bit of a preacher as well. And as a doctor, I've stood sometimes, gave some sermons on health related issues. And I was vegetarian at some point as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be vegetarian, I have a low carb, a ketogenic diet for you as well, by the way. I'll meet the patient where they are.
Sure.
Sometimes if you, the one of the largest countries, right? Well, two of the largest countries are in South or Asia, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some people who, for religious reasons, are vegetarians, and they don't eat, especially if they don't eat beef. Or, well, you have to meet those patients. I'm not going to, you come to my office, I'm not going to try to convince you to change neither your religion or your beliefs in reference to animals. So if you're vegetarian, then there are some vegetarians that will have eggs and will have fish, so they'll have where to get protein from. It is more difficult to do it with someone who's completely vegan. They do have to supplement a lot of things and try to get adequate sources of protein.
Sure.
But it can be done. It can still be done.
I'm curious, doctor. Now, do you have a gallbladder, or did you ever have your gallbladder removed?
I have never had a problem with my gallbladder.
Okay.
However, last year, October, as a matter of fact, I had a CAT scan. Actually, it was an MRI, and they saw a gallbladder stone. Never had any symptoms from it. And I eat high fat, you know.
Okay.
Cool.
Good, good. Okay. I was curious. I've been listening to Kelly Hogan for a couple years now, and she just interviewed Dr. Avedia, the heart surgeon doctor. It's probably been a couple weeks back, and they got into talking about the gallbladder, I think, was one of the topics that had kind of came up. But he gave a list in that interview of several different tests that he recommended that everybody do, you know, once a year, just to stay on top of things. And you can use it as comparative. Like you were saying, you could pull up your labs for the last 15 years and look back and see. That's so neat to be able to do that.
And nowadays it's even easier. I mean, you can probably, if you go to the major labs, for example, you can open patient portal accounts and you can view your past results. I have access to all their labs because they were done through my office. So I do have 15, 16 years. Usually the patient portals haven't been available frequently. Maybe it's been more frequent past 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not difficult to track if you want to track. I love people who like tracking, you know, and they come to the office with their notes and information. I love having the information. I don't personally do it a lot, but there is a YouTuber I sometimes see that she loves tracking, right? And she'll make graphs and, okay, you know, that's a good thing. And Kelly Hogan is interesting because she's kind of you know, if you want to do it in a relaxed way, you can do it with her. And if you want to do it with extreme tracking, you can also do it with air because, you know.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. There's all different people.
Different personality types.
Yes.
And this has been a great conversation. Is there, for all of our listeners that are listening, is there anywhere where they can follow you? I know you have a YouTube channel. You haven't posted much. Is there any, you want to direct our listeners to any of your social media?
So, the real Dr. Nelson, spelled out completely, both in YouTube, you can find the same thing in Facebook. I think, even though I haven't posted much on Instagram, it's also the real Dr. Nelson. And I think I've been opening these things. I don't use them that frequently. I think TikTok also. One of them might be at the real Dr. Nelson Vasquez, because the real Dr. Nelson wasn't available. But the real Dr. Nelson, and on Facebook, I have a page, Metabolically Healthy Again, which I am in pursuit of being, and hopefully that'll be the name of my podcast, Metabolically Healthy Again.
Awesome. Awesome. Love well, this it. Has been great. And do you have any closing comments? Do you have anything else you want to leave with the audience as we close?
As far as your health, if you're listening to this, probably you're looking into or already doing a low carbohydrate or carnivorous diet. Just yes, do your research, but do it. You have nothing to lose by changing what you eat. I should retract those words, because you do have a lot to lose. You might lose weight. You might lose blood pressure numbers. You might lose glucose numbers, right? You might improve your triglycerides. You might improve your good cholesterol. You might improve your health. And we didn't even touch anxiety, depression. Bipolar illness. Mm-hmm. I am amazed at, you know, all the research that's coming out regarding mental health. Mm-hmm. Because who would have thought, right? Now, my brother had epilepsy, and I don't know, I was 5 when he passed, but I don't remember my mother doing any type of low carb on the advice of the physician. He just got medication for his treatment. And I have nothing against medication. I still prescribe medications when appropriate. But the first diet should be probably a low carbohydrate diet, a ketogenic diet specifically in the case of epilepsy. And it seems all the brain disorders that you do need to be in ketosis. It seems that whenever you're looking for an anti-inflammatory type of response, you probably need to be in ketosis. It's exciting, I think, all the research that's coming. But it's amazing. All the brain disorders get better. And it's a change in your diet. It's not medication. It's not the side effects from multiple medications. Because very often, sometimes when you have a patient who just doesn't want to or haven't been told that they could change the diet and they could change what they have, they keep adding a medicine for this and a medicine for that. And unfortunately, some doctors have the attitude, you have a problem? I have a medicine for that.
Yeah.
And you have this other problem? I have a medicine for that. Mm-hmm. Oh, doctor, I develop a side effect from the first medicine. Well, I have a medicine for that.
Yes.
So if you're looking into this because you want to regain your health, definitely try it. I don't think you have anything to lose. You have a lot to gain. If you're completely healthy and you're the 7 to 12% of metabolically healthy people in the United States, keep doing what you're doing. Okay? But if not, you need to change what you eat. And the, you know, if you don't want to go all the way into a zero carb type of diet, stops with the grains and the legumes and the starchy vegetables. You need to decide whether you want to have some fruit or no fruit. If you're not metabolically healthy, you probably should avoid them as well. And just give it a try. 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. My wife is off of insulin now for a month or two at least. And anyone can do it. Anyone.
That is awesome. Well, y'all heard the doctor. You can do it. You just have to, you're hearing the success stories. So now you just have to take that motivation and these success stories and try it for yourself. You have nothing to lose. You have everything to gain. And we love and appreciate y'all. Thanks for listening. This is a value for value proposition. So if you do appreciate the information we put out, please go on over to thetexasboys.com. We are completely demonetized on YouTube. You can support us over there at thetexasboys.com. And remember, y'all,
stay fearless, my friend.